I'm Bill Charlap, and it's an honor to be here for Marion McPartland in celebration of the 30th anniversary of Piano Jazz, and to be here with a guest on the very first season of Piano Jazz, one of my all-time heroes, Mr. Cedar Walton. Welcome, Cedar.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Bill.
Well, it's great to be here with you. I love listening to your music, your compositions, and your piano playing, and I don't ever remember a time when your playing was not in my inner ear from listening to your records and being aware of your original voice and sound.
Thank you very much.
There are many things I want to ask you about, but before we do, it would be great to hear you play something. Would you like to play a solo for us?
Yes, of course. I've chosen Skylark. I think Hokey Carmichael had something to do with it.
One of the great Hokey Carmichael songs. Well, I can't wait to hear you play it. Beautiful. What a beautiful treatment of that song. It's great to hear the way that you harmonize it and make it your own.
Well, you're very insightful because I have been in love with that song for quite a while.
Well, I was wondering, you grew up in Texas, didn't you?
I did. I was reared there, yes.
I was wondering what brought you to the piano and to jazz and...
Well, I have to give my mom credit. Both my parents actually were jazz lovers due to the likes of Ellington coming to Dallas once a year. And, of course, radio, I was born in the 30s, so by the time it was in the mid-40s, I was about 10 years old. And so from 44 on, I was exposed to this great music. My mother took me to concerts, including those of Ellington and anybody else who might show up. So I had a chance to see the likes of Hank Jones, Oscar Peterson, Duke Jordan, piano-wise, anyway. And then,
yes,
of course, the great Ray Brown, Lester Young, Dizzy Gillespie, quite a few artists.
So many of the focal figures played.
Yes, and so just to answer your question, that's how I got into it. And then, of course, I was trying to emulate recordings of that time by the likes of Nat King Cole and taking the clock back a little bit before I started going to these concerts, recordings. So I was trying to emulate them. And then when I grew older and got deeper into music, I realized I wasn't even close.
Well, it's certainly humbling to listen to players like Nat Cole.
Yeah.
But that's the same way that many players feel listening to you.
Oh, thank you very much. It's very flattering.
I was wondering, you mentioned Nat Cole. Was he a very important pianist in terms of inspiration for you?
Well, I would say so. Not only me, the whole country. The advent of Capitol Records was largely based on Nat Cole and...
Johnny Mercer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the Nat Cole trio was very, very popular. They put out a great, what we call now, hits. My parents and their friends had these records, so I was just exposed to that, you know, along with a few others. But especially those, for some reason, stood out to me and attracted me.
Well, they're so clear and swinging and
yes,
clean, and the arrangements are so
yeah,
intelligent.
Right, exactly.
And they're so much fun to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Were there other pianists?
Yeah, well, sure. As time went by, there was a great radio show named Piano Playhouse, which was hosted by one classical pianist and one sort of a popular pianist. And they had a guest jazz pianist on every week. And so I would hear these people in the likes of Earl Garner, Art Tatum, Earl Father Hines, Mary Lou Williams, George Shearing and the like, and I couldn't get enough. So radio was the thing in those days, Bill.
Hmm.
And so I tuned in, put my ear to the...
Yes.
Luckily, they came all the way through to Dallas, Texas. It was network shows.
Did either of your parents play an instrument?
Yes, my mother played the piano.
And did she teach you?
Well, she had students, and she taught me as a... as much as she could. We couldn't get along that well, but that's another story. That's a social story.
Well, it's always...
sociology.
It's often easier for children to be taught by a teacher than their parents if their parents are actually musical, because
yes,
it's good to have that distance from teacher to student, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose so, too.
You're known as one of the important composers in the history of this music. At this point... pieces like Bolivia and Firm Roots and many others have become standard repertoire for jazz musicians. I wonder how you first got involved with composition and what were your inspirations there?
Well, same thing. These visits to my the part of my house which had the piano in it, in the wintertime I had to wear my overcoat because it was somewhat cold in that part of the house.
Yes.
But I was determined to go and try to emulate and make up pieces as an attempt at something original.
So you composed from a very young age.
Well, I was making up stuff, you know, but I didn't remember it necessarily the next day.
I see.
So yeah, that's fair enough to say that I was attempting to be original at that early age. And I would try to write songs, parts out for my musician friends in my generation, you know, just forging, you know, like a guy, I don't know, something like hieroglyphics. I didn't know what I was doing. And they said, see, these notes don't have any stems on them. I said, oh, I see. Excuse me. I just forged. I think it was just something I thought I could do, even though I couldn't.
Well, it's obvious that you can. Would you play one of your compositions for us?
Of course. This one I decided to name Midnight Waltz, sort of like a blues in 3/4 time.
All right.
Thank you.
Wonderful. There's so much clarity and rhythmic, melodic, harmonic identity to your music. It all sounds like Walton.
Oh, you're very kind, Mr. Charlap.
Well, it's true, and it's had a very great influence on musicians, some of the best pianists of a younger generation. I could always hear when a pianist has drawn on your very identifiable and original style.
Thank you.
Well, there's more music in a minute with Cedar Walton. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. I'm Bill Charlap, and this is Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland and friends. When did you make the move from Texas to New York?
Well, Bill, I went in a roundabout way. I started west, went out to Denver on a family vacation one summer, and I saw the campus, a new campus at that time in the 50s of Denver University. I said, wow, I want to go here just because of the dormitories, which is not very intelligent, at the face of it. But then they had a pretty nice music department.
What did you study there?
I started out in composition, and somehow that didn't really fit. They encouraged me to switch from that to a curriculum that led me into school teaching, music teaching in public school. For instance, we had to play all of the instruments, which I still think that's a good thing. That helped me later on in dealing with when I finally reached Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, which I think was a turning point, a stepping stone, if you will, to my interest in combining these sounds.
Do you feel that it helped you in terms of composing and arranging for those instruments?
Yeah, especially arranging. Mm-hmm.
But from there, you came to New York?
Yes, I dropped out of Denver U and just stayed around town and played with local musicians for at least a year, if not more, before I ran into a friend. I had befriended a person who had, a non-musician, who had been to New York and told me, man, it's great. I want to go back, he said. So we got in the car. And we drove from Denver to New York in 1955.
So you weren't going there for a specific gig or
anything like that.
You were just coming to New York to be around the energy of New York.
Because I had met the gig I had in Denver allowed me to meet some of the leading musicians that were based here, such as John Coltrane, the late Richie Powell, Bud Powell's younger brother. Charlie Parker, even. And there was a stop on that circuit, they used to call it, in Denver. So where I played, they all were obliged to come because that was the only place sort of open at that time of night.
I see.
So I had the nerve to try to be a college student and play an after-hour gig, which finally the after-hour gig won.
How did you start playing with players like Kenny Dorham and J.J. Johnson and
at one time... Birdland, which was located on 52nd and Broadway. On Monday nights, they would have players who were striving to make a name for themselves, me included. And I just saw Johnny Gary. He was the manager of Birdland. So Johnny could book those of us who were striving to be in the music business.
I see.
But of course, we were already sidemen.
Yes.
So he would choose. I still have him to thank for booking me in those groups. So J.J. Johnson told me that he heard me at one of these occasions, and he hired me.
And you went on the road with J.J.
No, we toured.
You toured, okay. Yes. The terminology has changed.
Yes.
And then subsequently the Jazz Tet with
Art Farmer
and Benny Golson.
Right. Tootie Heath and myself who were playing with J.J. changed from J.J. to the Jazz Tet. Hmm. And we were in Chicago once with the Jazz Tet, and Art Blakey called me and asked me, was I ready? Because I'd met him early on, and he stored his image of me in his mind. And when Bobby Timmons left, Lee Morgan was leaving his group at the same time, because they both had very popular recordings out. Lee Morgan had one named Sidewinder, and Bobby Timmons had one named Moaning.
Of course.
So they were
huge
qualified
hits.
To become leaders,
yes,
which Art Blakey encouraged.
Yes.
Because he had somebody waiting in the wings, which would happen to be me and Freddie Hubbard. We joined the same day.
Well, it was an incredible band. That's one of the great, great periods, of course, for Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, with Walton and Freddie Hubbard, mm-hmm. Wayne Shorter, Curtis Fuller.
Right, and Audra encouraged us to compose.
To compose and play your own music, I see.
Compared to the band I just left, which was all Golson.
Got it,
yeah,
got
so
it.
That was a turning point.
Well, I'd love to hear another one of your compositions, Cedar.
I'd be happy to play one, Bill. This one's called Bremont's Blues, dedicated to a friend of ours in
A Frenchman,
France.
No doubt?
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
This is for Bremont.
Thank you.
That's wonderful. I heard a little bit of strains of a couple of things, a little bit of giant steps in the beginning, or a little bit of that sort of sound.
Right, yeah, I somehow merged the two together.
Well, that's all right. Of course, on the very famous recording of Giant Steps of John Coltrane, the pianist was Tommy Flanagan, but I don't know if enough people are aware that you were the first to record that with him, actually. Isn't that correct?
Yes, the sequence was Cedar first and then Tommy next. I left town and John had a deadline, and so he went on and did it without me.
I see.
Much to my chagrin.
Was it? Did it seem like something very fresh to you in terms of the composition, the way the harmony moved?
A total understatement. Fresh is the most total of understatements you could ever make, Mr. Charlap.
Yeah.
It was a very difficult piece. Of course, John had been working on it incessantly. His wife, Naima, at the time, informed us that he would just play literally 24 hours a day. And then he would just fall across the bed with his saxophone across his chest and rest and then resume. And so he practiced it. He perfected it. But he was a perfectionist anyway.
Well, it does seem that there is some secret to that type of virtuosity. It's practice.
Yes,
the right. Great secret.
Yeah.
I remember a wonderful interview that I heard once. It was Paul Desmond talking to Charlie Parker, and he was interviewing him. He was asking Bird, how did he develop such virtuosity and such command? And he said something like, well, for a couple of years, I practiced pretty much almost all day and all night, every day.
Yes.
And there's a beat there, and Paul Desmond says, well, I guess that explains it.
Yeah.
Right there. But I guess the challenge of that piece must have, as fresh as it sounds today, and it still does, still sounds very fresh.
Yes, it's an enormously original approach to a sequence of chords.
I heard also a little bit in your solo, I don't know if it was intentional, a little piece of Jeru that...
Yes,
I
remember accidentally stumbling upon that solo, and I thought of you as a great lover of that time period in jazz.
I always loved Birth of the Cool and the way that those arrangers wrote. There's something to be said for having that type of charisma.
And timing.
And timing, and timing, and genius, and genius too. Well, there's more to come with Cedar Walton. You can find artist information, set lists, and more on our website, pianojazz.npr.org. I'm Bill Charlap, and this is Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland and friends. Maybe it would be nice to play something as a duet.
Yes, it would be.
I was thinking about All the Things You Are, the great Jerome Kern song that, you know, has been such a popular song for jazz players forever. We're going to play this with your treatment of the song, which your personality comes through in as a composer and arranger.
Oh, you're very kind, Mr. Charlap.
This is the Waltonized version of All the Things You Are. Thank you.
Well, that was quite fun, Bill. All the Things You Are has always been one of my favorites, and as well as you said before, a favorite of jazz musicians for many decades.
Well, it sure is fun playing two pianos with you.
Well, me as well, Bill. I've been taking up all the spotlight here, so to speak. So I wish you would honor me with a solo that features you.
Well, as long as we're playing Jerome Kern, I'll play another great Kern song, All in Fun.
Oh, that sounds great. I can't wait to hear it. That was really great, Bill, especially since I hadn't heard it before, so it's always refreshing to hear something unfamiliar, and so I can't predict where you're going, which I never can anyway, but in that case, it was totally impossible and made it more wonderful for me to enjoy.
Thank you, Cedar. Jerome Kern's songs are amazing. They always sound to me like he has one foot in Europe and one foot in America. I mean to say that they're certainly American songs, but they're so super sophisticated somehow. All the Things You Are certainly swings, but a song like All in Fun, it's almost like an art song, you know, as is All the Things You Are. I always love that about Kern's music.
Yes, indeed.
Well, I'm having a great time with my friend Cedar Walton, and there's more in just a minute. Our program is made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz and is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. I'm Bill Charlap, and this is Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland and Friends. Well, we we've talked about you working with great artists as a sideman, Blakey, the Jazz Tet, Kenny Dorham, J.J. Johnson, Milt Jackson, but you are one of the great leaders in this music and one of the great trio players. I believe your way of working with bass and drums has been very influential on other trios that have come after you, and particularly the magic chemistry that you had with Sam Jones and Billy Higgins, and subsequently, I think, Ron Carter and Billy Higgins. Those are some of the great recordings, and there's some incredible history there. Can you tell me something about your history with those musicians? Of course, Lou Hayes as well.
Yes. When Sam Jones decided to, come back into normal society after he'd been in the elite company of people like Oscar Peterson,
I love your coin of phrase, come back to normal society.
We had met when I was just a fledgling musician here in New York, and we made a fast friendship, and he remembered me after his excursions into the a great community that he visited for such a long time, and then so he decided to just take up with me. In fact, I think Norman Simmons was quoted as saying, Cedar was lucky because, you know, he's got Sam Jones. So I thought that was an interesting comment and observation because I didn't have Sam Jones. You know, Sam Jones sort of like had me.
Yes.
But him being a bass player, the focus in a trio setting usually is, of course, on the piano. But Sam was kind enough to just put all his energies. We would arrive in his Cadillac, for instance, at some place. And so somehow I surmised that the manager of wherever we, whatever venue we arrived at, would see that and decide that we deserved to get paid.
Yes, you did. And then some. And,
so,
and Billy Higgins?
Higgins, of course, had come to town with Ornette Coleman. And in those days, in the 50s, a group could play at a place for months at a time. You know, unlike now, I think it's like 1 week or 2 weeks maximum. But in those days, it was two, three, or four, or five, or even 6 months. So Higgins was available to me to hear with Ornette Coleman down at the Five Spot in those days. We hooked up somehow, and then Sam joined us, and we went forward. And then, of course, after Sam came David Williams, and then when I moved to California, where Billy Higgins resided also, we would come in and play often 2 weeks at a time with Ron Carter, if that answers your question.
Well, there isn't any specific question, but just to say that what an incredible chemistry you have had with those musicians, and all of you play with such clarity in terms of your rhythmic approach and harmony and melody. It seems that there are no wasted musical choices.
Well, that's a very nice compliment.
It really fits together like a perfect Swiss watch, but a loose one too, if there's such a thing. Well, I'd love to play another duet with you.
That's a good idea.
I was thinking about Star Eyes.
Very good choice.
It always makes me think of Charlie Parker.
Right.
Let's give it a go.
Okay. Thank you. that was Star Eyes, the way we felt about it on this particular day anyway, right?
Well, that's the fun of it, isn't it? It's different every time. Well, it's been great fun being here with you today and listening to you play and playing some duets with you. And I'm sad to see that our time is almost over.
I'm even sadder.
Well, why don't we play one more duet to close out our show? Should we play Willow Weep for Me?
Yes, very appropriately, since we're so sad, too.
Okay. Wonderful. Thanks for being on the show, Cedar.
My pleasure indeed.
You've been listening to Marion McPartland's Piano Jazz with guest host Bill Charlap. Today's guest was pianist-composer Cedar Walton. Join us each week at this time when Piano Jazz brings you outstanding artists for conversation and improvisation. Piano Jazz is recorded at Manhattan Beach Studios in New York City and is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Tyler Hartman, mastering engineer David Mitchell, engineering assistant Dale Anderson, production assistant Grant Jackson. The executive producer is Elaine Freeman. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal mail address is 1101 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and NPR. Contributors include the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, celebrating 10 years of support for the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. And the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR.